Hi friends, it's your girl Katie. We're back with another episode. So happy to be back with you guys. And look, I fucking told you, I'm sticking with my schedule this year. 2024, no more hiatuses. No more month-long breaks in between episodes. We're doing two a week. And I, just so you guys know, like what to expect moving into 2024 schedule-wise for new episodes, I'm thinking I'm going to do like Saturday, Sunday release, and then Wednesday, Thursday release. Haven't exactly specified it yet, and it kind of might be whenever I have time to sit down, record, and then edit and get those episodes out, depending on the week. But that's what you guys can look forward to in 2024. So today is Sunday. I'm recording. As soon as I finish recording, I'm going to get off here, edit, and get it up for you guys by 10 p.m. West Coast time. So my East Coasters, tomorrow, Monday, on your way to work, you can listen to my voice in the car if you want while you're stuck in traffic. If you get stuck in traffic, I don't know. But I promise you guys, we're sticking with that schedule this year, and I'm so excited. I've been taking a lot of notes the last couple of weeks. I've been watching a lot of documentaries, a lot of different things on like Max, Netflix, YouTube, TikTok. Guys, the true crime on TikTok is popping. I don't know if you guys have been able to see any creators over there that have kind of been just, you know, posting cases that maybe are notorious, but also not as well known, which is something that I try to do in this podcast. So it's been really cool to see those on TikTok, and they do it in like, you know, six parts or whatever. And I get so invested into it. I'm like scrolling, looking for the next part. But yeah, I've been watching a lot of stuff. I've taken a lot of notes. I've written down a lot of case ideas, a lot of things that we're going to talk about moving into 2024. And I'm just so excited, you guys. This has been my third year of the podcast coming up in March. And, you know, I haven't been as consistent as I'd like to be. Just with, you know, gosh, guys, I think all of us as individuals have just gone through so much in the last 3 years. I think that COVID took a lot from us, and we're all trying to like recoup and get back from that. And mentally and physically, it's just been a lot. So I'm so sorry that I haven't been as consistent as I would have thought I'd been when I initially started the podcast, but I'm very thankful for all of you listening, new or old, for the support. And we're going to get it right this year, guys. I fucking promise you, we're going to get it right this year. So anyways, the case I have for you guys today is a docuseries that I just finished a couple days ago. It was on Max. Is that what they're calling it nowadays? I keep wanting to call it HBO Max, but Max, excuse me. And it's the Curious Case of Natalia Grace. I'm sure a lot of you have maybe seen it already. If not, definitely seen it circulating social media and the internet, and previews coming up for it if you have Max when you click into it. So I watched it, and it's so funny. My best friend in Florida, Rachel, if you're listening, I love you, texted me and told me to watch this. And she, obviously all my friends know that I'm super into true crime. So if they hear like a crazy story, watch a crazy video on YouTube or TikTok or whatever it may be, they're sending it to me and they're like, I want to know your opinion on this. Like, what do you think about this? And I love it, you guys. So anyways, if you're listening, feel free to do that at any point. But she sends me this documentary the other day, and she told me, hey, I started watching this. This is some crazy shit. I need you to watch this and tell me your opinion on it. So I start watching it, and my opinion probably changed like four times throughout. I would literally would text her and be like, this is some crazy fucking shit. And I actually ended up finishing the docuseries before she did. I don't even know if she's finished it yet. But once I started, like, I just couldn't stop, because I was like, wait, what's the storyline here, you know? And that's where I was stuck at. So I watched this two-season docuseries in a week. I was obsessed. Every free second I had, I was watching it. So the first part of the docuseries is about the family that adopts this little girl and basically their perspective on things. And then the second season of the series is the little girl speaking out. And you guys, crazy, crazy thing. If you have not seen it, again, it's called The Curious Case of Natalia Grace. That is on Max if you have it. If not, borrow somebody's login and watch it. Because I'm telling you, I literally, like, my mouth was open the whole fucking time. And I feel like I've been saying about the last couple cases that we've talked about on here, especially the Dr. Klein, the last episode case that we did. But just fucking crazy. And what's also crazy is this takes place in Indiana as well. And I was literally telling my friend today, what the fuck is going on in Indiana? Are you guys just like losing your mind within the last couple years? Like, I'm not really sure, but there's a lot going on clearly in Indiana that I did not know about. So we're going to be talking about that today, Natalia Grace. I will be citing everything in the episode notes. Any kind of articles that I use to take notes on this will be there. So, and again, I definitely recommend that docuseries on Max. It'll probably be a little more detailed than the notes that I do have for you guys today. Mine are kind of just like generic notes that I found on like the internet. And then it's going to be like from memory from the docuseries. But the docuseries was very, very well produced. It's very detailed. They have the prosecutors, investigators, journalists, social workers, doctors being interviewed on this. So I definitely recommend that so you can hear directly from the source as well. Great docuseries, very well produced. So yeah, definitely check that out. Before we do get started today, though, I just want to say, I was telling you guys on the last episode, it's been like negative temperatures in Colorado. Finally, this week, we were in the fucking positives again. I did not think at any point in this lifetime that positive temperatures would be something that I would wake up and be thankful for, but was very thankful this week that we were in the 20s and 30s. A lot of the ice has melted, but before it melted, you guys, I don't know. I'm from Florida, so obviously I'm not used to driving in like the snow and the rain. And I've been in Colorado 4 years, so I probably should stop saying I'm from Florida. I'm not used to it. But the truth is, I'm just not. You know, I spent 22 years of my life driving in the rain, never, ever any ice, like literally ever. So definitely something that I'm still getting adjusted to, especially after not having a car for 2 years. So the other day it was literally freezing and I was like, oh, I kind of want like coffee, you know, didn't have any coffee at the house. I'm definitely a drive-through coffee girl. Sorry. I know I should make it at home. I would save money. It breaks my heart knowing that, but 9 times out of 10, I'm just going to buy it. So anyways, I decided I'm cold the other day and I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to go to Dunkin', you know, it's kind of snowy outside, definitely icy and cold, but Dunkin's like 2 or 3 miles away from my house. You know, there's a Dunkin' every couple miles. And I was like, it'll be fine. I'm going to go to Dunkin', right? So I'm driving to Dunkin'. I'm, you know, listening to music, just enjoying my little drive, going slow because it is icy and I'm aware of that. So I'm driving slow, going to Dunkin'. And I forget on the way to Dunkin' that there's a fucking hill, like a decline that my car has to go down. And I'm like, oh, shit. So thankfully, it's like 7, 8 p.m. at this time. And I'm like, okay, well, it's not super busy out here. So like, it'll be fine. So I'm going down this hill and I start like pumping my brakes, trying to come to a stop. And my car just starts fucking sliding out, bitch, going down this hill. I'm not even kidding you. I'm obviously panicked now. Like, even if you know you're going to be able to control it when you're sliding out, like you're still panicked. And I was definitely panicked and I'm sliding out down this hill. And then there's a light at the bottom of the hill. And the light changes to red. And there's like all these cars coming. And I'm still fucking sliding out. And I'm like trying to stop before these cars hit me because the light changed. And then I just decided, you know what? Fuck this. I'm not stopping at this light. And the cars, like, they were close, but I was still far enough away where I could just like, you know, hit the gas a little bit, catch my traction, and then get back on the road. And ran the light. And that's exactly what I did. And we made it out. And we still came back with Dunkin'. So thank you. I'm an expert. That's all I wanted to say. And if there's ice on the ground and you decide that you want Dunkin', you should probably just Postmates it. Yeah, you should probably DoorDash that shit. That is my advice to you. So have you guys seen, like, I've been on, I don't know if anybody, well, I know a lot of you listening to this probably use TikTok, but I've been on like the Portland ice storm side of TikTok where it's just like completely iced over in Portland. And watching people like try to get through their cars, or their cars are getting stuck in like weird places. And it's just been so crazy to see. Thankfully, it has not been like that here in Denver. So I will take that. But God, you guys, that shit's so scary. Like, it's like ice skating, seriously, like in your car or even outside. And it's just, it's terrifying. So if you're somewhere where it's cold and there's been snowstorms or ice storms and it's been like dangerous outside, please stay safe. And girl, fuck that job. Literally fuck that job. Your life is worth way more than trying to get to work is all I'm trying to say, because that's how I feel. Like, I love my job to death, but I'm not risking my life to go into the office. Like, and I, like, thankfully I have great bosses and like a great management staff, so I don't think they would expect that of us if it was like life-threatening conditions, you know. Thankfully they're very sweet. But if you're listening and you're job does expect you to come in under those conditions, fuck that job. That's all I'm saying. Okay, guys, we're going to go ahead and jump into Natalia Grace. So like I said, the docuseries is definitely going to be a lot more detailed than I am. The notes that I found online just were not as detailed as that docuseries was. I just don't know if there's like a lot out about this, and I don't know if that's like intentionally done. Like, they're trying to keep certain things under wraps. I'm not too sure, but I'm going to give you guys what I have, and again, go watch the docuseries, Curious Case of Natalia Grace on Max. So if you know anything about the Natalia Grace case, it's essentially about this couple from Indiana. Their names were Michael and Christine Barnett. They were formerly married. Now they're not. We'll get into that. But they were this married couple. They had three boys, and they were successful, you know. Like, Michael had a job that, like a 9-to-5 job. I'm not even really sure what he did, to be honest with you. But he, you know, was paying all the bills. Christine was, like, very active and opened, like, a school inside their house for, like, disabled children. And she was, like, very into social media and could turn a video or, you know, anything, like, into a profit off of social media. Their oldest son, Jacob, was very, very smart, and Christine ends up writing, like, a book basically about him. I mean, he was, like, super smart, you guys, like, college-level math and at, like, the age 11, 12. So, anyways, she even profits off her son. So, they're this successful couple from Indiana, you know, nice house, live in a nice neighborhood, three kids that are all very well-behaved, very smart. Honestly, to anybody looking in, they just seemed like this picture perfect family living the American dream, you know. Anybody that knew them just thought that they were this well-rounded family, essentially. So the two meet while they're in college, and Christine actually abandons her Amish background in order to marry Michael. And then, like I said, they also have three sons. Christine is also the founder of the nonprofit organization Jacob's Place, named after her and Michael's eldest son. Jacob's Place continues Christine's advocacy on behalf of autistic children. So anyways, they seem like this picture perfect family. They have these three sons. They're raising them in this nice neighborhood in Indiana. And then they eventually decide that they want to adopt a little girl. And Michael in the documentary explains the details, or at least his story, of how that adoption eventually becomes to be. But they decide that they're going to adopt a little girl. He says that they basically get a phone call one night, and the adoption agency says, "Hey, we have a little girl from Ukraine, needs to be adopted, 6 years old. She has dwarfism, and you basically have 24 hours to make a decision." So he says it's a back and forth conversation between him and his wife, Christine. They decide that they're going to adopt the little girl, and they have to fly to Florida to go pick her up. And that's where the story begins. And something I just want to say before I do get started is, like I said, the first half of the docuseries is Michael's perspective on things. Christine is not in the docuseries. So it's Michael's perspective of things. And the second half is Natalia, the little girl that they end up adopting, her perspective on things. You guys, I spent the first half of the docuseries thinking that Natalia was just like this evil little girl, and like, this was crazy. You know, I thought it was like the movie Orphan, and they actually make a reference to that quite often in the docuseries, but that's what it felt like watching it. I was like, oh my gosh, this little girl terrorized this family. And then you watch the second half of the docuseries and a lot of things come out. And this honestly is just a very tragic story where the system tragically failed this little girl. And I will say there are a lot of lies, a lot of things that have allegedly happened, and we don't know the truth. The only people that do know the truth are, of course, Christine, Michael, probably their three sons, and Natalia. But what I can say is there's a lot of lies. There's a lot of lies. And I honestly think, from my perspective, that it's coming from Michael and Christine Barnett's side, where more of the lies are happening at. But We're going to talk about it. I want you guys to watch the docuseries and then, yeah, anyway. So Natalia Grace, the little girl that they adopted, she's born in the Ukraine to an Anna Gava. After birth, she was placed in an orphanage in the Ukraine. She was diagnosed with a rare form of dwarfism. She came to the United States as an adoptee, and she was adopted by Christine and Michael Barnett in the spring of 2010. So Natalia had a previous adoptive placement in the United States and multiple temporary placements prior to her adoption by the Barnetts. She took the name Natalia Grace Barnett. As Michael explained in the first episode of the docuseries, at the time of the adoption, Natalia's Grace Ukrainian birth certificate showed her birthday as September 4th, 2003, meaning Natalia would have been 6 years old when she was adopted. So in the docuseries, Michael says that the family quickly begins to suspect that Natalia was a fully grown adult masquerading as a child. Which is just like, okay, how? In the first episode of season one, he also said that Natalia harbored on an evil streak, wanting to harm their three sons. In season one of the docuseries, Michael says that Natalia tries to kill Christine by poisoning her coffee cup and by pulling her into an electric fence. So this is what I mean by the docuseries. We'll give a little more detail. But they were talking, Michael, was talking about several instances where, for example, with their sons, Natalia would take one of their toys and then throw it into the street, hoping one of the boys would like run into the street and get hit by a car. They talked about a time that Natalia was helping Christine wash dishes and she picked up some cleaning chemicals and poured it in Christine's coffee cup when she walked out of the room. And then when Christine came back in and took a sip out of it, she spit it out because she realized that there was like Lysol or like Fabuloso or something like that in her coffee cup, you know, and took a video of it and the whole thing. They talked about Natalia hiding knives in her room or standing over their beds, like with knives, basically. And again, like they're saying all this and it sounds crazy, right? So in the first season of the docuseries, you're like, oh my God, like this little girl, like crazy. But also keep in mind, they're saying that she suffers from a rare type of dwarfism. So this little girl's like 3 feet tall. How is she standing over your bed, you know? But it's just the way he talks where he's very convincing when he is speaking. So anyways, they adopt this little girl. They start to suspect that she's not really 6 years old. Michael says that the first night they had her, they're at a hotel in Florida. Christine's giving Natalia a bath. She screams. Michael runs in there and Christine says, Michael, look down. And he looks down and Natalia has like a full bush of pubic hair as a 6 year old. Okay. Again, I do understand how that could be weird, but you're also with a disabled person whose body is growing and functioning differently than an average adult's body would. You know what I mean? So who are you to say like what could happen if she should or shouldn't have pubic hair at six? We don't really know that. So they start to suspect different things going on. In the first season of the Shocking ID docuseries, Natalia's former adoptive father, Michael Barnett, says, or alleges, Natalia threatened to stab my sons, drag their bodies outside, and bury them under the deck. She tried to poison and kill my wife. The Barnetts accused Natalia of emotionally and physically abusing them, as well as looming over the couple while they were sleeping with a knife in her hand, a claim she denies. And that's the thing, like, again, when you think about it, this is a six-year-old girl that they're thinking is older, right? They're like, oh, she's lying about her age. There's no way that she's six. Okay, even if she was, she's 3 feet tall, you guys. She has a rare form of dwarfism, which means that her joints and her bones and her body are not forming the same way that normal adults are. So she can't, it's not like she can run up a flight of stairs like we can. How is she standing over the bed? How are any of these things going on? But these are all allegations that they're using to try and justify the fact that they think that she's older. Just crazy. And I'm telling you, Michael is very convincing. When you're watching, when I was watching the first season of this docuseries, I was texting Rachel and I said, oh, I said, Natalia is crazy. I was like, she is a psychopath. This is what I'm saying to my friend. And it's because he's very convincing and he's very performative. Like, and you'll see that if you watch it. Later, the couple claims to have discovered that Natalia had been menstruating. We don't know who she is. We don't know where she's really from, Michael said. Who the fuck is this person? For all I know, she'd been living in Ukraine for 20 years. She'd been taking knives out of the kitchen and hiding them under her bed, Michael says in the documentary. She said, I'm going to kill you in your sleep. In the first season of the docuseries, Michael said he and Christine started doubting Natalia's age when during bath time they noticed that she had body hair. In the same episode, Michael recalled they discovered that she had her period. Natalia replied in the season 2 that the blood was the result of Christine forcing her to use tampons when she was 7. So that's something Michael talks about in the documentary. He says that he comes home from work one day and Christine and Natalia are standing there. And Christine is also very performative in the manner of she always had her phone out, like ready to record Natalia, almost like, okay, well, is this something that is candid and Natalia is saying, or is this something that you've rehearsed with her and it's performative and now you're ready to catch it on camera for evidence, you know? So anyways, Michael comes home from work one day and Christine and Natalia are standing there and she says, tell daddy what you told me. And basically Natalia tells Michael that she bleeds, she has a period. And Christine said that she's been balling up like socks or something in her underwear and bleeding on them, then throwing them out the window. And that's how she found them. That's what they said in season 1. So then you flash to season 2 where it's Natalia's side of things. And she said, that never happened. She said, the reason I was bleeding is because when I was 7 years old, Christine told me that I had my period. She forced me to use a tampon. Then I was bleeding. And when I took the tampon out, she said, see, you have a period. So it turns into this back and forth thing where it's like Natalia's story versus Michael's story. And then you kind of just have to pick, you know what I mean? You're like, okay, well, who do I believe here? You know, what's the real story? And that's kind of what the prosecutors and journalists and everybody involved were trying to figure out, like, what's actually going on? How old is this person? 4 months into her adoption, Michael said in the first season of the docuseries, Natalia's dark side emerged as she provoked his children by hiding their toys or throwing them into the street and urinating on his youngest son. In the same episode, Michael said Natalia jumped out of the family car in public spaces with the engine running in order to appear as a poor, helpless little girl. And that's the thing, again, because they're trying to claim that Natalia is older than what she is, right? So that's their whole argument. She's not really 6. But you have to imagine, this little girl was just adopted from the Ukraine. She's been in an orphanage. She's disabled. Clearly, her parents that just adopted her and are supposed to love her have some sort of anger or like weird anxiety towards her. So there is a video of Natalia jumping out of the car, which Christine took right on cue. And it just, to me, it doesn't even look like she's trying to make herself look like a helpless little girl. It's like almost like a cry for attention. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not getting the love that I need or the attention that I need. And that's what the video looked like to me. So that's something you can make your own judgments on. But boy, when I tell you, Christine had that camera fucking ready. Christine had that camera ready at all times. She was ready with that fucking record button. And that's something that we see over and over again in the series, which, again, take that as you want, but comes off as very performative and almost like rehearsed to me. In 2012, the couple had Natalia admitted to the LaRue Carter Mental Hospital in Indianapolis. After Natalia was released from the mental institution, Michael and Christine had her age legally changed to 22 years old and placed Natalia in an apartment building by herself without customizations for her special needs in Lafayette, Indiana. So yeah, again, this is kind of where I was talking about how the notes don't give you all the details. So they put her in this mental institution, right? And from their perspective, from what Michael says, they're like, we're trying to help her. We just want to get her help, right? But from the court's perspectives, as they're investigating this later, they're thinking like, this is their way to like rid themselves of her. Like, let's get her in a mental institution, you know? So she goes to this mental institution and there's like a couple different stories that come out. Natalia says that she was released because the doctors working literally told her verbally that there's nothing wrong with her and she doesn't need to be there. Michael states that him and Christine got a call that Natalia was being inappropriate with the male patients at this mental institution, and that the nurses and doctors said that Natalia was like coming on to them and like trying to hurt them kind of thing, and that they needed to come pick her up. But there's no medical record of them ever saying that. Actually, there is medical record of them saying that nothing was wrong with her mentally, though. But anyways, through this whole time and through this whole process, even before she goes to the mental institution, Michael says that him and Christine take Natalia to all these doctors, right? They go to the dentist, they go to the pediatrician, they go to all these doctors, and all these doctors are saying, this is not a six-year-old little girl. This is not a six-year-old little girl. So you're watching this docuseries and you're like, holy shit, is this little girl 6 years old? Like, I have no idea. So she gets released from this mental institution. They said one of their doctors had the advice to, you know, go down to the court system and have her age legally changed. He said with international adoptions, a lot of times the birth date is incorrect and you can go down to the court system, you know, file something and have a court hearing to have the date or the birthday changed for your adoptee. So they go and they have her age change, and the first apartment that she moves into is pretty close to their house, not very far. Natalia, they drop her off there because she's 22 in their mind, right? And they're like, okay, well, the courts have legally defined that you are 22 years old. Here's an apartment. You are a disabled human, but we're going to drop you off in an apartment. So that's what they do. They drop her off in an apartment, and Natalia has, you know, a lot of problems there. She is going into people's apartments and taking food and drinks because Michael and Christine are not buying her enough food, groceries at all. She's walking around the neighborhood just kind of doing whatever. Because, I mean, what is she supposed to do? They just dropped her off in this apartment. Like, she's a fucking disabled little girl. But again, in their mind, it's a disabled 22-year-old. So she basically has all these different situations, and again, you can see the different situations in the docuseries that when a year comes and the end of her lease is up, the apartment complex decides that they're not going to be renewing a lease with Natalia. So her parents move her to Lafayette, Indiana, which is about an hour outside of where they live. And in the docuseries, they said that Christine said that this was a white trash town, so nobody's going to notice Natalia. Like, it's going to be fine if there's any issues there. It's a white trash town, is what she was saying. So they take her to this apartment that, first of all, has, like, 16 steps to get up to her apartment. She's 3 feet tall, has dwarfism, has joints and shit that make it hard for her to walk in general. And they go and drop her off in an apartment that has 16 steps to get up to her apartment. No accommodations, no step ladders. She couldn't reach the stove. Come on, guys. Like, picture being 3 feet tall. You can't do anything in your apartment at that point without a step ladder. And they drop her off. And then there was a school in Canada. Like I said, their oldest son, Jacob, was very, very smart. So this school in Canada wanted Jacob to come there. So they drop her off in Lafayette. And then her, the kids, and Michael moved to Canada, and they leave her there. They leave her there. So they're not bringing her groceries. They're not doing none of that. They left Natalia to fend for herself. They said, you're 22 years old. Figure it the fuck out. And they're supposed to be paying for all of her stuff. So one week in the middle of summer, they did not pay her light bill. The electric was out for a week or two, something to that effect. Natalia leaves. And she meets this other couple called Cynthia and Antoine Manns, and she ends up staying with them. And this is the family that ends up adopting her in 2023. But yeah, they just kind of left her there. And like I said, that's the whole thing in this documentary is like, who's telling the truth, Natalia or like Christine and Michael? But you guys, they had like text from Christine and Michael where they're talking about dropping her off in this apartment, and they're just like, not caring. You know, they're like, oh yeah, we're going to drop her off. Nobody will notice her. She'll be fine there. It'll be whatever. We're moving to Canada. Hopefully we're done with this kind of thing. That was their plan, was to drop her off at this apartment in Lafayette, pay for everything, and just kind of keep things under the hush and not have any more issues. You know, and it's just like so sad, but let's keep going. Because again, legally, Natalia at this point has been ruled 22 years old, still disabled. And in the state of Indiana, you are responsible for your child until they're 21 years old. So they had the courts change her age to 22. Very convenient for them. Very convenient for them. But still, she is a disabled person. So let's keep going. they dumped her, legal analyst Beth Carraras, a featured contributor in the docuseries, told the Post in May 2023. The idea that would put her in an apartment that didn't have modifications or an occupational therapist is heartbreaking. Michael says in the documentary that it was Christine's idea to leave Natalia to fend for herself. He and Christine divorced in 2014. This is a 1,000-piece puzzle, and I think I only have 300 pieces together, Natalia said in the January investigation series. I want you to know how old I am. I want you to know about my past because I want to know too. I want the puzzle to be complete. According to Natalia, Michael and Christine borrowed the plot of this story from a 2009 horror movie filmed The Orphan, about an adoptee with a dark agenda who turned out to be much older to craft their narrative. So I don't know if any of you guys listening have seen this movie, but it is about, you know, an adult that pretends to be a child and gets adopted by this family and just makes their life like a living hell. And she is standing over their beds with knives and shit. So the fact that Natalia states that this is probably where they pulled their creativity of their narrative from is absolutely spot on. In season two, Natalia also denied trying to poison Christine by pouring a cleaning product into her coffee cup and stating, I want to kill you. She said that Christine had beat her often, and she forced Natalia to spray cleaner inside of her cup for a stage scene on camera. And this is what I'm talking about. Like, I think it was very rehearsed. You know what I mean? And so another thing that really bothered me is like, well, you'll get into it. We'll get into it a little more. But Natalia, basically anybody that like met Natalia, she would tell them that she's 22 years old. She'd be like, I know I look like a little girl, but I'm 22 years old. And so all the adults that were being interviewed for the docuseries were like, I just had no idea. You know, like she spoke like an adult. Like she told me she was 22 years old. And it's just like very rehearsed to me by both Michael and Christine, where it's like, yes, she is 6 years old. And yes, if a grown adult is threatening you to say a certain thing and you're fucking scared, you're going to say you're 22 years old because you don't know what else to do. You're a little girl who got adopted. All you know is these are supposed to be your parents that want the best for you. And you're listening to them and you're being abused and you're scared. And that's what the whole story ends up being, is like she's just this abused, scared little girl, and it's just so fucking awful. And Christine and Michael plotted and rehearsed anything that she did. You know what I mean? And if she was acting out, yes, she was being abused. That would make sense that she's jumping out of your fucking car, Michael. Like, ugh. That same year, Natalia moved in with Antoine and Cynthia Manns, whom she met by chance when she was struggling to fend for herself. Law enforcement agencies investigated Natalia's case between 2014 and 2019 in order to determine if the Barnetts had wrongfully abandoned her. In September 2019, Michael and Christine were charged with two counts of neglect. Michael was found not guilty on both neglect charges in October 2022. The neglect charges against Christine were dismissed in March 2023. DNA test results have since shown that Natalia is currently around 22 and she was under 10 when she was first adopted by the Barnetts. This one little piece of paper throws every single lie that the Barnetts said right into the trash with a match, Natalia says to Antoine about the DNA test in the docuseries second season. This is so big because literally, this has been 13 years of just two people lying their butts off, she continues. They ruined a kid's life. They pointed me as some big monster when in reality, they were the ones. The prosecutors for the neglect case against the Barnetts were able to locate Natalia's birth mother in Ukraine. Natalia's mother was identified as Anna Gava, who was born April 20th, 1979 in Latvia? I don't pronounce shit correctly, guys. I'm so sorry. But yeah, she's born April 20th, 1979. DNA testing confirmed Anna as Natalia's biological mother. If Natalia's core assigned birth date of 1989 was correct, Anna would have given birth to Natalia at 10 years of age. The prosecutors also obtained birth and hospital records from Ukraine, which support Natalia's original September 4th, 2003 birth date. The prosecutors were barred from presenting the evidence that Natalia was a minor child born in 2003 when she was left to live alone in an apartment, and the neglect case was tried based on Natalia's disability, not her age. So yeah, this is something, again, that they explain more in the docuseries, but they were able to prove that Natalia was 6 years old when she was adopted. So the whole storyline of, oh, she's older than what she says she is, and the court changing her age, and all of this shit was a fucking lie. Like, it was all a fucking lie, and that's what's so crazy. So when they dropped Natalia off in those two apartments that she lived by herself in, she was 8 years old when she got dropped off in that first apartment. And a lot of her neighbors were like, oh, she always looked dirty. She was always hungry. She was 8 and disabled. She had no way to take care of herself. She had no idea how to do that. She didn't know how to shower properly or make herself something to eat. So it's just like so fucking crazy that they dropped this little 8-year-old girl off based on the thought that they thought she was older. And they were creating this narrative of all these crazy things that she was quote unquote doing when she's not physically able to do 80% of the things that they were talking about. There's a story that Michael says in the first part of the docuseries. It was one of the son's birthdays and they go to like this fucking farm or some shit like that to milk cows because the little boy loved cows. And there was an electric fence there to keep the cows in. And Natalia and Christine are having an argument. And so she tells Michael, you know, go ahead with the boys. I'm going to stand right here with Natalia until she decides to act right. So they stand back and Michael says he hears screaming and he turns around and Natalia is dragging Christine by her hair to the electric fence. So the three foot tall girl that's 7 years old at this time is dragging the full grown woman by her hair into the electric fence. The full grown woman that is not disabled at all. The 6-year old disabled girl is doing that. Interesting. So stories like that, you know what I mean? And it's just like, okay. So I think it got to the point. This is what I think happened. I think they adopted this little girl. I think that her being disabled and first of all, adopting a child in general is not easy, right? Because I mean, especially when they're older, when they're a baby, like I feel like that's a little different, but when they're like older and they're already aware of the fact that you're not their biological parents and they're just coming to live with you, like I feel like there's more trauma with that. They remember more. So that's already difficult, right? It's already difficult adopting a child who's aware that you're not their fucking real mom or dad. Like that's difficult. My grandma adopted all 3 of her children, and I know that that was difficult. You know what I mean? So that's already a hard thing to do. But then like her being disabled, like I think more comes with that. Like you're having to put a lot of money into stuff and a lot of surgeries, a lot of equipment, just the shoes that Natalia needs for her feet so that she's able to walk properly are like $30,000, stuff like that. So I think they adopted her. It was just a lot going on and they got to the point where they just wanted to dispose of her, like without suffering any legal repercussions from that, I guess. Ugh. And so the thing with the court system, so because the court system had already ruled Natalia's legal age as 22, even though biologically the prosecutors had investigated and determined that she was, you know, 8 years old when that happened, legally, because her age had already been changed to 22, they couldn't use her biological age as an argument and then neglect cases against Michael and Christine because the court had already ruled that she was 22 and they hadn't changed it back yet. They hadn't filed that paperwork or changed it back yet by the time this trial came around. So the judge was like, hey, I know there's an argument over her age, but I don't want to fucking hear it. She's 22 legally. And so basically the entire trial was based on, was there evidence of neglect because of her disability, like kind of thing. And yeah, both of the, Michael was acquitted and Christine's charges were dismissed. And it's just crazy because you're watching the documentary and you're hearing all kinds of things, you know, like Christine beat the fuck out of Natalia, like literally would like elbow her and like fight her like a grown person. And first of all, she's disabled. Second of all, she's a little girl. She pepper sprayed her in the face. She made Natalia walk around the neighborhood barefoot with no shoes when it's hard for her to walk in general. She would get mad at her if they were, like, out in public and Natalia's feet started hurting and she couldn't walk. Christine would, like, get pissed off at her about that. Different things like that. Christine had the boys pissing in Natalia's bed because, again, Natalia's disabled, so she had accidents. You know, she would maybe have an accident on the couch or somewhere in the house. And when that happened, instead of Christine being a mother and just cleaning that up and not embarrassing her adopted child, she would have one of her older sons go, like, piss in Natalia's bed almost for, like, retaliation, you know? Stuff like that. It was mental and physical abuse that Natalia was going through, and they're trying to justify all of that because she was older and they didn't know who she was. And it's like, why keep her? You know what I mean? Like, that's what I don't understand, is like, why keep her at that point? If you're doing all this to her, you're trying to write her the fuck off, why keep her? Like, is it like a how are you going to look to the public kind of thing? Like, what is the public going to think of you for adopting this disabled girl and then, like, getting rid of her? I'm not really sure, like, what it was. There's a lot to that. And again, watch the docuseries for that. But was Christine trying to make money off of her and it didn't go according to plan? I don't really know. It's crazy, though. It's crazy that they kept her and just completely, like, abused her instead of just, you know, giving her to a family that would have taken care of her. After Michael was acquitted last year, he reached out to Natalia with an olive branch. Their first reunion in season 2 of the docuseries was brief and explosive, with Michael storming out after an argument with Natalia's now adoptive father, Bishop Antoine Manns. In their second meeting, Michael sobbed while apologizing to Natalia, who said that she forgives him. Christine Barnett did not respond to request for comment from the docuseries, though she called it a highly sensationalized show in a January 4th Facebook post. Christine said on Facebook that Natalia was a very much loved and cared for member of my family, and called the discipline very minimal and not out of the bounds of normal parenting. Christine added, "I have had good and bad days as a mom. There were many days raising 4 children that I depended on the power of coffee to get me through the day. Anyone who has children knows that the feeling of going to bed at night hoping you have done the right things and enough for your children on a daily basis. I'm sure there are plenty of fails and some successes I have had as a parent and a mom, but I was not abusive to my children. The fact that these false allegations are occurring after a trial with evidence which was dismissed is disturbing," wrote Christine. "It's like being assumed guilty after being proven innocent." In June 2023, Natalia was adopted by Indiana couple Antoine and Cynthia Manns, her guardians of approximately 10 years, in an emotional court ceremony filmed in the last episode of the docuseries titled One Door Closes. Oh gosh, you guys, that's a crazy story. Oh, and that's the thing that I wanted to mention. So I did say that Michael and Christine get divorced, right? And so in this docuseries, it's Michael talking. Natalia and Michael meet up and have a conversation sitting next to each other. And Michael, here's the thing I will say. I do believe that Christine was the ringleader, probably, in, like, the circle of manipulation and abuse against her family. The older son, Jacob, is also in the docuseries, and he talks about, you know, a lot of the stuff that his mom put the whole family through. And so I do believe that she was the one doing that. Natalia never stated that Michael physically abused her. She said that if anybody was doing anything for her, it definitely was Michael. So I don't believe that he was initiating the abuse, but the problem is that he wasn't stopping it. And so in the documentary, like, you see Michael almost, like, trying to make himself as, like, the victim of Christine too. Like, he's talking to Natalia like, "Oh yeah, you know, I get it. She's a fucking monster. She's evil. She fucked us up." And it's like, while I do believe that Michael probably was mentally abused by Christine, and that she is a complete narcissist, and that she is controlling and put her family through a lot, you allowed a 6-year-old little girl that you fucking adopted, you signed the paperwork for, a six-year-old little girl who was disabled to be abused mentally and physically, and you did nothing to stop it. Is that not you condoning it? And that's what irritated me in the series, is that he's very performative. So he's crying and he's the whole time. And don't get me wrong, again, he probably feels awful for what happened, you know, and he's probably been through a lot himself. But it just came off as like very performative to me and not very like authentically genuine. Like, are you actually sorry for what happened to this little girl? Or are you just trying to like make yourself the victim as well so that you can't be held accountable for anything that's happened to her? Because that's what it seems like to me. And again, I do believe Christine was the person that had motive here. But when you see the text messages between those two, like, you're participating in the conversation where you're clearly not on Natalia's side. You know, like, you're clearly just like, I don't know, you guys. You have to watch it. It's just, like, so crazy. And he tries to make himself seem like a victim. And I'm just like, you are a grown-ass man. And this is a six-year-old disabled little girl. And you guys were just like, fuck her. Fuck her. Like, crazy, crazy story. Again, that's the curious case of Natalia Grace on Max. And neither one of them got convicted on any kind of means of neglect against Natalia. And it's sad because, again, she was disabled, but the court said that they couldn't use her age as an argument in the case. So they basically just got away with dropping off and abandoning their 8-year-old girl in two different apartment complexes and not worrying if she was eating, if she had electric, if she had clean clothes, accommodations for her disability within those apartments. Nothing, you guys. Oh, this story has made me so mad. And I just like feel for Natalia, because not only did they ruin her life, but they lied on her. Like, I'm telling you guys, I watched the first half of this docuseries and I was like, this little girl is a fucking sociopath. Like, she is crazy. I don't care how old she is. She's crazy. And then you get to the end of season two and you're like, wow, Michael and Christine did not get convicted. Nothing, you guys, like nothing. And it's so crazy because, like, looking at everything that they've done to her, and if you go and watch the docuseries, like I said, it's very detailed. And just listening to all the things that she went through. Like, I didn't even feel like we covered 50% of it, of the abuse that she went through on here. Awful. So fucking awful. And she's definitely going to spend the rest of her life working through that, which is so sad. So go watch it and tell me what you guys think. But I feel like the system truly failed this little girl, like from the beginning, you know, from the family they placed her with, from the doctors and shit involved in the case. And that's another thing, is they interviewed all the doctors and the doctors were like, no, we told the parents that she was a little girl. So they lied about that. Okay. They definitely lied about that. So it's like, okay, nobody thought to like report anything suspicious going on, or like abuse, or like Natalia might have like Stockholm syndrome is like kind of what it seems like, with how she's just like assuming the role that Christine had provided her because she didn't know any better, you know, and like she thought this was her mom. Oh, you guys, I don't know. The whole story is so crazy and it just makes me so mad, because it's like, why keep her? Like, why adopt her in the first place? And that's something that Natalia asked Michael in the docuseries. She was like, why did you adopt me? Like, why not take me somewhere else? You know, why were you continuing to just allow this abuse to be inflicted on me? And he just kept saying he's sorry. He was going through it too. And I just, ugh, it put a bad taste in my mouth. It was like, fuck you, dude. Like, I don't care if you were being abused as a 40-year-old man. Your 6-year-old disabled daughter was being abused. Like, you need to make that a priority at this point, you know? Ugh, it makes me so fucking sick. And I just, I don't know. You guys know I love kids and I worked with kids for a majority of my life. So anything like that ever harmful wise happens to them, like, just really makes my stomach hurt. And this really made my stomach hurt. So that is the case of Natalia Grace. I could sit here and just be pissed off about this for the next hour, but you guys definitely go check out the documentary. Again, it's 2 seasons, very detailed, very organized timeline wise, and I definitely recommend it. And let me know what you guys think if you do watch it. So sad. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. We are going into a fresh week, so I hope everyone has a good week. Stay focused. We're almost to the end of January. I was telling my mom yesterday, I was like, I feel like I've slept my way through January because this is just not ever a good month for me. Like, my seasonal depression kicks in January, and I like spend most of it sleeping, just trying to fucking make it to the next work day. And that's where I've been this month. So we're almost to the end of January, and then I don't know. It's February. I don't know what you guys got going on in February, but that's my birthday, baby. 27 coming soon. 27. All right, guys. Thanks for listening. Share this podcast with a friend. Leave me a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Share it on your Instagram story. Send me a DM or a text. Let me know what we should talk about next on here. If you guys have any crazy cases or Reddit threads, let me know. You guys know we'll talk about it on here. Until next time, I love you guys.